Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richmond brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year, or online for $15 a year, at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up! Because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia and the future of freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the future of freedom. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm at scotthorton.org, noagendastream.com, Anomaly Radio, and all over the place. Full interview archive, more than 2,800 interviews now, going back to 2003, are all available at scotthorton.org. You can sign up for the podcast feed there, all the interview archives if you want. Whole show archives are there, too. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show, et cetera, ad infinitum. All right, so our next guest on the show is Peter Ludlow. He is a professor at Northwestern University, their Department of Philosophy there, and he's got a piece at thenation.com. The Strange Case of Barrett Brown. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks a lot, Scott.
Very happy to have you here. Very happy to see this great article. I really like Barrett Brown, and I can't stand to see what's happening to him. And I guess I just take pleasure in seeing his story covered at all. It's the only hope he's got of freedom is for his story to be out there wide enough that the government's efforts against him become such a laughing stock that they finally have to back down. Basically, as far as I can tell, that's the only hope he's got. So this great article, where you simply recite all the facts of the case, or do a great job in explaining just how horrible the government's position is on this thing.
I had a question, Scott. Did you actually know him?
I've interviewed him a couple of times. Yeah, okay. I've never met him in person, okay. But I've interviewed him a couple times, you know, back in 2010, 2011.
Right, okay.
And, it's kind of a complicated thing, but go ahead and tell the story. You do such a great job of telling the story in here. Give the audience, I guess, the short version, and we can go back and follow up on all the important points to hit.
Sure, let's do a short version of the story. Barrett Brown is a very interesting journalist. He's written some nice pieces in Vanity Fair and places like Huffington Post and The Guardian. And at a certain point around 2010, he got interested in Anonymous and the work they were doing in the Arab Spring. And that sort of took him further into Anonymous and reporting on it. He was basically writing a book about Anonymous at that point. And there were a couple of hacks of interest that were directed at private intelligence firms. One was a firm named H.B. Gary. The other was a firm named Stratfor. And they yielded massive troves of emails. In the H.B. Gary case, I think there was like 70,000 emails. And in the Stratfor case, there were something like 5 million emails. And Barrett had a wiki set up called Project PM, where he and a number of his associates were basically working on an analysis of what they were digging up from those emails that were released. And the crucial thing to understand is that Barrett wasn't involved in any hacking at all. And in fact, what he did do is take a URL to the location of the material. And I don't know if it was on Pastebin or WikiLeaks or where, but he copied the URL from a chat channel, and he pasted the URL into a chat channel for the editorial board of his Project PM. And that seems to be the principal thing that got him in trouble, which is right now he's looking at something like 105 years in prison, and the key charges are a number of charges involving alleged credit card fraud. And the whole idea is that there were unencrypted credit card numbers in this data dump from the Stratfor hack, and they're claiming that by copying and pasting the link to where all those emails were located, he was in fact engaged in credit card fraud with his associates. And so that's his situation. He's sitting in federal custody in Texas, down by you somewhere, and he is looking at a total of 105 years in prison.
Okay, so now, when it comes to that original charge, I guess we've got to talk about the whole FBI thing and all that in a second, but that main charge about the copying and pasting of the link, the only thing they're able to make out of that is, or that they're trying to make out of that, is credit card fraud. They're not trying to pretend that this means that he participated in the hack, which, as you say, someone else has already pleaded guilty to.
That's correct.
And he's a journalist. He's not a hacker. Barrett couldn't have broken into Stratfor if he'd tried all week long, right?
No, he couldn't hack his way out of a paper bag.
Right.
No. I mean, I think that everyone realizes that.
Right.
I don't think the government is conceding that he is a journalist, or that Project PM was a journalistic enterprise. So they're claiming that Project PM, which you could go and, you know, you can all go Google it, just Project PM, and it'll take you there. They're claiming that it was a kind of criminal enterprise. And they're also disputing that he's any sort of journalist, which is peculiar, because what do you call someone who publishes articles in, you know, The Guardian and places like that? You know,
terrorist!
I guess so. I guess.
Well, okay,
that's
now
coming.
So now, okay, yeah. Tell me this now. Let's take politics out of this for a second. And, well, I don't know how to really construct a hypothetical without the you know, political motivations of the people involved here in the first place, but I want to try to narrow it down to just the behavior of copying and pasting that link. When you talk to the legal eagles about this, would they concede that the feds could possibly have a case that this would amount to him conspiring with those who did the hack to knowingly get someone's credit card used? You know what I mean? Like, they have their court precedents in a case just like this, sort of that kind of thing.
Yeah, but look, I don't think they, by they I mean the Justice Department, I don't think they're thinking in terms of, do I have a case? It's, can I cobble something together which threatens this person with life in prison and force him to plea to something? So the whole idea of, is there a case or did he do something wrong? That sort of thinking is just out the window. We're living in an age where people rig up, you know, some sort of preposterous charge like we have in this case, and it's a low likelihood that you could, you know, win with that case, but someone is gambling with their life, in effect, and so you force a plea to whatever it's going to be. You know, Jeremy Hammond pled to 10 years. Made a plea that which could put him away for 10 years. No sane person would think that there's actually a case here, but that's not the issue. It's like a game of chance. Like, if I can threaten you with life in prison, maybe I can get you to plead to, you know, however many years he's eventually going to do here.
Right. Yeah, in other words, it's just a political prosecution. The same kind of thing where John Kerry would be screaming his little head off about it if it was any other country in the world.
That's true. I think, though, that when you say it's a prosecution, that in a certain sense, when you say it's a prosecution, you have an image of some sort of trumped-up kangaroo court with an actual trial, and we don't even have that facade in this case. I mean, I don't think these things are actually going to go to trial. It's like what they did with Aaron Schwartz, for example. I mean, if you remember that case, right,
where they hounded him to death.
They hounded him to death, yeah. And he was looking at whatever it was, 35 years, something like that. And it becomes, there's this sort of prosecutorial discretion that we have now, wherein basically, if you think about it, you know, everyone is technically a felon at this point. I mean, So start with the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is the one that they used to get or to go after Aaron Swartz, which the Justice Department interprets that to mean that if you violated the terms of service of some computer program, you are in violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. I'm sure you've been through this on your show before, right? So in effect, if when you click that box that says, you know, when you go on OkCupid and you say, I'm not going to lie about my age, right? And if I lie about my age, I violated the terms of service and I am technically a felon. Well, in an age when everyone is technically a felon, that means that prosecutors have this ability to go after anyone who happens to be too much of a gadfly or too much of a pain in the ass system. And I think this is just one piece of evidence. This is just one example of many, many recent cases like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, where they know their intention is never to really have a jury trial of any kind. They just pile on charge after charge after charge after charge until you just finally lay down and say, fine, whatever, go ahead. Who do you want me to snitch on? What do I got to do? Don't kill me.
I think that's right. I don't think there's any intent at all to have a trial. I mean, just in general, 95% of all cases, if that, or 95% or more, are pled out at this point. So only 5% of these cases where someone's charged that people go to court. And it raises questions about, you know, what kind of legal system do we actually have here if things aren't being adjudicated at trial and, you know, people are concocting these sort of crazy interpretations of the law to, like, threaten people with 35 years or 105 years or whatever it is and just sort of bully them into either accepting a plea or suicide or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so now talk about the whole thing with the FBI agent. Is that still one of the charges that he threatened the FBI agent?
Yeah, that's one of them. So in addition to these charges that have to do with various forms of credit card fraud, there is an obstruction of justice charge, and there's a charge relating to a threat against an FBI agent, and those two are related. At some point, now, as I understand the details, it goes something like this. The FBI acquired a subpoena to look at his computer or computers, and I believe that when they came to look for him, he wasn't at home. He was at his mom's house. And he, at least the story I get from his side, is that he stashed his computer at his mom's house. The police came to his mom's house with a search warrant and a subpoena for the contents of this stuff, and they charges mom with obstructing a federal investigation, obstruction of justice, threatened her with years in prison, and she pled to, I believe, a year of probation. But when his mom was a target of the investigation, and apparently his mom was really, really messed up about this, he flipped out. I mean, they basically found a way to push his buttons to the point where he flipped out. So he uploaded these kind of incoherent videos on YouTube, and one of which he says, he threatens the FBI agent who's going after his mother. And he says, well, I'm going to go after you. I'm going to destroy you. And by that, I don't mean I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to look into you, and I'm going to look into your kids too. How do you like those apples? And so that got him the charge of threatening a federal officer.
And you know, the thing of it is, and people can go and look at it on YouTube, and as you watch it, you will think, oh man, just stop yelling into the camera now. Oh no, don't keep talking. I really wish he had not done that or whatever. But it is clear in context. And when you get, I forgot his exact words, but whatever, I'm going to destroy you or some very vague term like that. But it is so obvious that what he's talking about is, I'm going to Google the hell out of you, and I'm going to post what I find on a page on the internet somewhere. This is not a threat.
Yeah, I don't think it's any sort of, it's certainly not a physical threat. I mean, the other thing you have to put in context here is that the guy is, he was a recovering heroin addict, and he had been on Suboxone for a couple years. And for whatever reason, in the middle of all this, he had gone off his Suboxone. So he was going through withdrawals from that, and he was completely flipped out. I mean, he was out of his mind when he's posting this stuff. But I agree with you. It's like he's totally tweaked out. I mean, flipped out when he's like posting this. But it's also obvious he's not going to like. It's not an actual threat. I mean, I don't think anyone could like look at that and say it's a real threat. But obviously, you know, the FBI can take that and go to a judge and say, look, we got to go get this guy. And they did.
And he's just being held without bail now, or what?
That's correct. Yep.
Because of this terrible threat.
Yeah, as a general rule, these people get held without bail. There's a sort of level of paranoia about anyone who's associated with, forget about whether they're hackers, anyone who's associated with the hacking community, there's a kind of level of paranoia that, you know, they can do things like start World War III by whistling into the telephone or something like
right.
that. I mean,
yeah.
that was an actual case some years ago.
yeah, you know, Cracked has a good one, the top 10 things that movies think computers can do, like control
yeah.
every red light in America from a laptop or whatever. And it's like, no, only in your imagination and in Hollywood. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. But it shows there's a kind of level of ignorance about technology that sort of runs through the legal system, especially when you get to the bench and judges basically, you know, they're still trying to figure out how to program a VCR, and like no one even has VCRs anymore, so they could stop trying and try something else.
Yeah.
And so you get, you know, us prosecutors are generally smart enough to know that judges don't know anything about technology, and they could put the fear of God into a judge just by, you know, talking about some very rudimentary tool like Tor, for example. I mean, that was one that came up in the case of Jeremy Hammond's trial. The judge was very concerned that he was using this program Tor. And, you know, I mean, like, you know, most college kids, I think, know how to use Tor. But it was just a total mystery to the judge. And this is one of the problems that that people are facing here.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. Now, so they try to take his money away. Say, oh, no, you can't have a defense fund. But then they gave it back, right?
Well, they had raised something. I mean, they haven't raised that much money. But at a certain point, they had raised $20,000 for his defense fund. And then they froze it. I have no idea what they were thinking there. I mean, they thought it was going to be used for some nefarious purposes. I mean, I have no idea what that was about. I have no idea what the judge is thinking in this case. I mean, it almost seems like the judge is clueless. I mean, on many, many levels.
Well, but he's got some good lawyers now, right?
Yeah, that's right. He's got like a kind of a strong legal team right now, and I hope things work out well for him.
Yeah, I mean, I forget the guy. He was famous for defending somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, Guantanamo. He was with the Advocate General thing. Swift, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's the guy that won the Hamdan case.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that speaks well of him. You know, I like the sound of that. If anybody's got a chance of standing up to the government on this. I mean, a lot of times it really just does come down to the personality of the lawyer. You know what I mean? I always think of the Randy Weaver case, where, man, they had the entire weight of the state against him, and that lawyer, the guy with the tassels on his jacket, can't remember his name anymore,
yeah.
He went in there and just
yeah.
tore them apart. and didn't even put on a defense. He was done when he was done with his last cross-examination, and that was it. You know?
Yeah.
And that happens from time to time where a lawyer just gets in there, like Dick DeGaren or one of these guys who's just a super, you know, like a pro basketball player, only a lawyer, right? That much better than all the rest of them, who waltzes right in there and just tears the government to shreds and walks out in victory. Does happen from time to time.
Yeah, but the problem is we don't have enough of those lawyers.
Yeah, no,
I mean, we don't. There's too many people in jail and not enough lawyers that are, like, able to, like, help out with this. And
I think Cletus on The Simpsons says, I want that lawyer from TV with the tassels and the cowboy hat. Like, yeah, I don't know his name either, but, yeah, I want that guy. The guy that got Randy Weaver off.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Tassels. Anyway, so, well, you know, I don't know. You know, part of here's something to talk about from this article here is this whole new culture, this whole new aspect of society that never existed before. These anonymous hacktivists, these level 12 computer geniuses who really can protect their identities while they communicate with each other and do these hacks like against H.B. Gary and against Stratfor and others who deserve it. And I mean, it doesn't seem to me like they're going away. Maybe the FBI can crack down and get one or two at a time, but it doesn't seem like they could ever destroy this movement. It's on now. They got the masks from V for Vendetta and everything.
I would say that, people have been a little bit careless about talking about what they're doing and so forth, and it seems to me that these events are not really going to scare anyone off of these kinds of hacks, but probably just make people more cautious and more careful. I think the other element of this is that part of what these hacks have revealed is really the real story here, I think, which is this whole business with these private intelligence companies and how they're basically carrying out psyops against, you know, the U.S. civilian population. I mean, that's what's really been revealed by all this, and this is why Barrett got into it. I mean, this is what Barrett was really researching was, you know, this is not – everyone thinks about NSA, CIA, FBI, but that's just the tip of the iceberg here. I mean – the U.S. government, 70% of what it spends on intelligence it's outsourced, right? 70% of every dollar spent on intelligence goes to these places like Booz Allen and Stratfor and H.B. Gary and so forth. So there they are out there without any congressional oversight. And what are they doing? What are they up to? And the stuff that Barrett was digging up was the fact that, you know, people like Coca-Cola was going to Stratfor and saying, can you give us information on PETA, you know, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals? And then the guy at Stratfor says, the FBI has a classified file on them. I'll see if I can get it, you know? So it was like, it was so weird because it showed that there is this weird symbiotic relationship between these private intelligence companies and the Department of Justice in this case. And it was almost like the Department of Justice was working for Stratfor in a way, because the guy was like, yeah, they have a classified file, I'll get it for you. And, you know, Barrett was going through case after case after case like this, where Dow Chemical was doing surveillance on the Yes Men, where people were doing stuff, you know, making proposals to undermine Chamber Watch, which is a group that monitors the Chamber of Commerce. And, you know, there were weird disinformation campaigns that were being discussed, where they would like create sock puppets and go on social media sites and give the impression of grassroots support. So everyone is freaked out, rightfully so, about the NSA business and Snowden, but that is just the tip of the iceberg. And I think the real story here is, like, what are all these private intel companies doing without any kind of government surveillance going on? You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of oversight they have, maybe none. And they are quite possibly a bigger piece of the intelligence pie than, you know, our alphabet soup of like FBI, CIA, NSA, DIA, et cetera.
Sure, yeah. I don't have it yet, but I'm trying to get it. There's a brand new book about is it Tim Shorrock, the new...
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I've seen his book from 2006. Is this the book you're talking about?
Yeah, it could be. And then, of course, you know, even the Washington Post, Arkin and Priest did the Top Secret America and all that. There's been really good... Bartlett and Steele did a great one on SIAC. I mean, there's some good journalism out there against, you know, about how much of the intelligence is outsourced. And you're right. It's most of it.
Yeah.
It's the Cheney model.
Even the New York Times is waking up to this because their editorial on the 20th was about this. So it's a problem. I mean, people have basically created this Frankenstein monster of to these little private CIAs running around the globe, and like no one is in control of them. And this is really what Barrett was on about. This, if you go and look at his Project PM site, you'll see there's a lot of material on this.
Right. I mean, really, this is Barrett's problem, right? Is he basically is doing like Julian Assange. He's doing the New York Times, where he's just a journalist, but he's not the one doing the breaking in or the liberating of any documents. He's just making a lot available at once in a way where the New York Times would never do this to Stratfor or the U.S. government and make them look that bad. And in fact, liberate so much information at once that you got to create a whole new program to be able to sift it all and whatever. They just don't know what to do with a guy like Barrett except try to bury him under concrete. Because he's just way out ahead of them, but unfortunately he couldn't get to the Ecuadorian embassy in time.
Well, Barrett there's one way in which he's not like Assange, because Barrett's not making all this information available. All that information is actually on WikiLeaks. So the Stratfor stuff is up on WikiLeaks. So Barrett didn't even do that end of it. All he's doing is providing analysis of it. He's saying he's connecting the dots. He was looking at this stuff.
He's turning the data into information. He's making it available to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And it's weird. It's very weird. It almost seems like it's almost as though the DOJ is working for Stratfor in this case. It's like Stratfor needed to get the toothpaste back in the tube. We can't let all this information out about, you know, what we're up to as private intelligence contractors. And it's like, this guy Barrett Brown, someone's got to put him down. And it's almost like the Department of Justice is running errands for these guys.
Exactly. Since the days of Alexander Hamilton. That's the name of the game. All right, I'm sorry. We got to go. That's the end of the show.
All right, bro.
I really appreciate it, Peter.
Yeah, it's fun. Bye-bye.
Everybody, that is Peter Ludlow. He is a professor at Northwestern University, and he's got this great one. Man, it's really good. Please go look at it. It's in The Nation, at thenation.com, The Strange Case of Barrett Brown. Free Barrett! Free Brad! See you guys tonight on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 6:30 to 7 Pacific time, or see you Monday back here 11 to 1 Texas time. ScottHorton.org.
Hey y'all, Scott Horton here from WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, scott@scotthorton.org. And thanks.
Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey guys, I got his laptop.
Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill. And they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors and those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click Donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks. Admit it, our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Warren here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to a dollar a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.